We got anything for Mr. Day?
I've not heard from him. I said he would be here.
Okay. Everyone ready? All right, so why don't we go ahead and start the meeting. Good afternoon, my name is Daniel Henry, and I'm gonna go ahead and start the March 3rd True Commission meeting. If we can start to my left at the end of the dais and introduce ourselves.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Bruce Tyson, CPAC 4, Commissioner.
Daniel Henry, Commissioner.
Velma Roundsville, Northwest CPAC 5.
Don't forget your microphone, Mr. Roberts.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
All right, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, all right, cool. Just making sure. So I'd entertain a motion if everyone's gotten a chance to look over the minutes to approve the minutes from the February 3rd meeting. All right, does anyone second that motion? All right, any objections? Seeing none, show the motion approved. All right, so we have the pleasure of hosting Marsha, and forgive me if I mispronounce your last name. It's Solo, okay, awesome, who is the city's comptroller, and she has been invited to talk about the OneCloud Financial Management System implementation update. So the floor is yours.
Oh, good afternoon, everybody. I got to speak to you all about 17 months ago, and it was totally remote then. It was myself and Greg Peace, so I don't know which ones of you may have been involved in that, but I gave you a nice little PowerPoint presentation because it was remote. I don't have time to do that right now. So I'm just going to tell you a few things and then open the floor to questions you might have otherwise. So I have been with the city almost 2 years. And when I spoke to you 17 months ago, I would have been with the city about less than 6 months because I started in May of 2020. And the system went live on March 29th in 2020. February 29th in 2020, leap day. And of course, 3 weeks later, we all know what happened. The pandemic hit. And so the city shut down for a little while. And the essential workers, which all of finance was pretty much considered essential, was working remotely. Of course, we were working remotely with our implementers at the same time. And with everything else was going on, it wasn't exactly the best time to be implementing a new ERP system. So fast forward, doesn't seem fast, but in some ways it is. 17 months since the last time I talked to you, we have achieved a lot. And we feel like we have, at one point, the analogy that Joey Grivey was giving us was we are climbing Mount Everest, and we got really, really high, and then we reached the peak, which was great. But you know it's still dangerous when you're coming down the other side of Mount Everest, of the peak. So we successfully scaled that peak, and by that I mean we actually did complete our fiscal year 2020 audit, which is a huge accomplishment for a city this size and a new ERP system, much less one that was started during a pandemic, to actually get that done. And we did it successfully, as in we had an unmodified opinion, so that if you had a modified opinion, that would not be a good thing. So we managed to do that. We have our fiscal year 21 audit well underway at this point. Not where we would want it to be next year, but basically, this year's audit, fiscal year 21, is going to be so much better than fiscal year 20, and we know that fiscal year 22 is going to be even better than that. So we see a light at the end of the tunnel, and we're pretty sure it's the end of the tunnel and not a train coming towards us, which at a certain point we may have felt like it was last year. Fiscal year 22, also, obviously that's the fiscal year we are actually in, and we are working on closing the months for that. We are not caught up where we want to be, but again, that's because of all the challenges we're having. But we are making major progress. When I talked to you 17 months ago, when we had finished calendar-wise, fiscal year 20, none of the months were closed because it's just the whole challenge of the system. So we're in fiscal year 22. We're working on closing December. I know it's March 3rd. We thought we were going to close December a few weeks ago. Part of the problem and part of the reason things take so long is the system is huge and things happen. So we have a very good closing process. There are a lot of modules in this system, and you have to do each module in order. And we have had the pleasure of working with Oracle directly. We moved away from our initial implementer, which was AST, and we're working with Oracle Consulting Service. They have walked us through a very, very detailed plan for closing each month. We have closed multiple months many times now, and we get to the procurement module, and something burps on us. Part of that is because the system, Oracle, updates the system quarterly. We have to do quarterly patches. And if you've ever worked with software in any capacity, you know that when there are updates to the system, there are bugs and issues that happen. So this process that always works all of a sudden doesn't work. So Oracle is working directly with us on that. Otherwise, we would have closed December already and do the first quarter report for fiscal year 22. We're not quite there yet. It can be very frustrating for us on the accounting side because we know accounting. And you can always run into accounting issues, but that's why we're accountants, because we love that kind of challenge. And then when the system challenge hits us, those of us on the accounting side say, we didn't go to school for IT, you know. But we get really close to our IT guys and our Oracle people. So we made a lot of progress. We're much further than we were. Another issue that we had is we have the projects modules in this system, which is not something we had in Famous. It is something that more and more of us are more accepting of. We understand what the projects module is going to do to us. One of the main challenges that we have successfully met, and this may not be very clear to you, but in the payroll system, which we still use Oracle EBS, we weren't in Famous for that, and we do not yet have payroll in OneCloud. We had to translate the codes from Famous into our EBS system into OneCloud, and there's something called a Poeta that's an addition to the accounting string, and they have to match, and that's complicated. And we have someone in our department who is the manager of the procurement accounting, and she had been working every time that the payroll interface came through, there were things that didn't go through. So she had to go through and correct the Poetas. So we finally, working with Oracle, we got all that fixed, so now she doesn't have to do that anymore. For a while, every month she had to fix about 200 things, and now it's like if there's any errors, it may be two or three, and it's for other things. So that was something that has been met. That's really great. Interest distribution. If you know Famous very well at all, it is an all-year system. We have accounts that are known as all-years. OneCloud doesn't do all-years. They told us it would, but it doesn't. And we've found that other governments around the country have the same problem. So what we have to do is distribute interest to various grants and projects. Well, there's a problem in OneCloud that it doesn't carry the codes down to the level we need it. We cannot get the cash balance in OneCloud at any level below the fund. I mean, that sort of makes sense in a way, you know. A fund might be, each one of you has a checking account, that's your fund, your checking account fund, and you know the interest on that. Well, imagine if you need to apply the interest to different pieces of it. Let's say you've got three kids plus your spouse, and you want to give everybody the right amount of interest, but you don't know the cash balance each person had. So that's kind of where we were in OneCloud. We can't do the cash balance down to the level of the individual activities and projects. We have succeeded in coming up with a solution with Oracle. They worked with us on that. It's we do it by taking the cash balances when we first started, when we left Famous, and we have gone through and you say, what was it then? And every single month, what revenue came in, what expenses came out, therefore, what should the cash balance be? So we had to work through that for all the months. That is the best we can do. And at this point, we are now able to distribute interest down to the activity and fund level, which is a huge win. We went through many times when it's like that we can't do it. There's no way to do it. I was just talking a few weeks ago to accounting manager in Boca. They have the same problem. They're much smaller than we are, but they were like, yeah, we can't do that either. And I said, well, Oracle has worked with us. We have a solution. So because of what we're doing, we'll probably be able to help another government organization on that. So that's really good. Another issue is the carry forward at the end of the fiscal year. Now, some of it's obvious. Purchase orders that are still valid, that haven't closed, they get to carry forward in the next year. For our all years funds, that has to carry forward also. And again, OneCloud was not really set up to do that. So the carry forward we did for fiscal year 20 was pretty messy. Happy to say the fiscal year 21 carry forward was a whole lot better. And we know it'll be even better in 21. But it took tons of time in 20, and it took a little bit less in 21. But it wasn't a simple process. So that was part of the reason that things got slowed down. Another issue was fixed assets. Now, if you're familiar with the way fixed assets work before OneCloud, we didn't actually do fixed assets completely in Famous. We use an Access database, an old Access database. So when we moved to OneCloud, we had to not only take what was in Famous, but translate what was in the Access database. And governmental accounting, as you probably know, there's modified accrual and there's full accrual, and the assets only show up in the full accrual. And so that just makes things more complicated. Working through all of that for our fiscal year 20 audit was very complicated. Our auditor, our external auditor, Carr Riggs and Ingram, worked with us really well, but that took a lot of time. We also had some staffing issues in that we had the fixed assets manager who was with us before OneCloud got started, had some personal health problems. She left. We got somebody else in. He didn't stick around. Then we had a consultant because hiring was a little difficult. So we finally did find someone to the fixed assets manager. He's great. He dove right in. He was not stymied by challenges. So we're so much better on that. Speaking of staff, the accounting department alone that I am fortunate enough to lead, we have 54 positions. 65% of the people in our division are either new or in a new position since I started. We've had a huge amount of turnover. A lot of the turnover is because we had people who'd been with the city a long, long time. And for various reasons, they may have decided now is the time to retire. So I know the comptroller that I came after, he had personal health issues, so that's why he left. The fund accounting manager at the time also, she had some health issues. Other people also had been with the city 20 or more years, and they were ready to retire. They were in their 60s. They're like, okay, we're going to leave. Our last person who was going to retire left a couple weeks ago. So at this point, we're pretty much like, there's nobody planning to leave. We have been here. Other people who started maybe right before OneCloud, they worked really hard. They did a lot of contribution, and they just were like, we're done. We don't want to stick around. We're tired. We don't have faith that things are going to come along the way they should. So they're gone. But again, I am really proud of my staff. I had a new assistant comptroller start on Monday. She came to us from the town of Normal, Illinois. She has, I think, 11 years of experience working there. She's a CPA. She's very enthusiastic. She's not cowed by challenges. She likes them. And that's what I'm really happy with my staff. They are very into challenges. We have a good team. So we're moving forward. That's kind of what the challenges are that we have met. Overall, why you've probably picked up on this as I'm talking, why has it taken so long? I mean, the size of the city, this is not a small city. Big. One of the things in terms of the grants, we have a lot of grants, state, federal, otherwise. It's a huge number. And when we are reaching out to other cities that have implemented OneCloud, we haven't found any other city that has as many grants and projects as we do. So we don't think Oracle was really ready for this. So that was part of it. The complexity with everything. The fact that our original implementer didn't do a very good job for us. We were very happy when we got the opportunity to work directly with Oracle Consulting Services. We are now also working with Oracle Managed Cloud Systems. And the main thing they're supposed to help us do, one of the main things, is working with the quarterly patches. Because all of us accountants and the IT people, as we're going along, we're doing our regular work, and then every quarter there's an update. We can't delay them. We can't say, no, we don't want it. It has to happen. So that's another thing. Speaking of staff, you know, as I kind of was indicating when we got started, there were a number of people who were kind of like, I don't want to move to Famous. I don't like this. So they weren't very engaged. But also even the ones that were trying to get their regular work done at the same time they're being pulled away to do this implementation. So that was really part of the reason it took so long, so complicated. But we're really happy where we are now in terms of we're working with Oracle, two different areas of Oracle. They're helping us. We are fully staffed almost. The people that remain are very excited about pushing through. So that's kind of where we are. I will stop there, and if you have questions that you would like to ask and other areas you'd like me to delve into, feel free.
Does anyone want to start first?
Sure.
First of all, the system in place, is it developed in-house?
No. No, it's Oracle is a global company. Oracle Fusion is what they call it because this is Jacksonville. It was named OneCloud because Jacksonville is one city. I likened it to we're all old enough that we remember the grocery store that was quite small in our hometowns. And then think about the first time you went into a giant food store or a super Walmart and everything that's there. Much more than you ever probably need, much more complicated, lots of advantages, but it's huge. How do you find your way around a Walmart if all you've ever seen is the local Kroger from 1970? It's like totally different. So it is a system that kind of gives you, it's almost like walking in a candy store, to switch my analogies. A little kid walks into a candy store, what do you want? It's more than you could ever imagine. So we're very fortunate in that we have this system that is put together by a global software company that has a lot of experience. So in addition to the fact that it's not in-house, it's on the cloud. So Famous was not on the cloud. So that's a big improvement also.
I have a question, and then I guess I have a statement. Company I worked for years ago before I moved to Jacksonville, we were doing a software update and all of this. So I understand it is very challenging, and it sounds like you had a great sales rep in that he perhaps told you some things that were possible, but it was going to take time to do that. Mm-hmm. At what point in time did you start working directly with Oracle after it had been implemented?
Yeah, that's a good question. I tried to look at my notes and see. I know we started talking directly with Oracle's, and I forget what it stands for. It's their SAE group, but it's the Oracle Consulting Group that we got into at that point. We actually started talking to them last October. October of 20. So right after I talked to you all last time, we started talking to them because we were like, what's going on? AST can't help us very much. one of the things we've had to do, what Oracle helped us do, was walk through. We kind of did what was called a health check. And looking through how are things configured, and we found things that needed to be configured differently. And I'm not really comfortable, getting up here and saying AST wasn't good. They had challenges, and I wasn't here when it was initially implemented when we were going through the planning process, so I can't speak to that. But you could say that we may not have successfully communicated our needs to them. They didn't successfully communicate to us what it could do. Maybe everybody was trying their best, but any kind of communication can be challenging, especially for something this big and new for us. Thank you. Welcome.
One more question. Do you have just one big system, or do you have a series of components that can run more or less independently, even if something goes wrong in another?
That's an excellent question, too. One of the cool things about OneCloud, it is what we would call a fully integrated system. It has multiple modules. So I may miss a few as I'm just talking to you, but we have AP, we have AR, we have projects, we have procurement, we have cash management, we have fixed assets, and they all go together. And the projects module is one of the things that ties them all together. Because you can imagine if there's a big public works project, for example, that's going to touch everything in the city in terms of what it takes to get it done. And so that ties it through. But another way of looking at your question is it's not the only system the city uses. So obviously we work closely with the tax collector. Guess what they did? They implemented a new system in August of last year. So one of the things I personally have been working on in the last month was getting the reports I needed from them. Part of their problem was Well, we have some of it from the old system. We're still learning how to pull the reports from the new system. So there are other systems in the city, and we have interfaces that come into one cloud. I already mentioned payroll. So payroll is still in Oracle EBS, and there's an interface that has to happen. There are multiple interfaces. So part of my team, it's accounting systems, their responsibility is to review the interfaces. There can be various reasons why something may not work in an interface. Fortunately, most of the time at this point, the problems are user problems. So somebody who has to do things to make an interface happen, they just do something wrong. So one of my team members was able to look at that and give some great feedback to the people and say, hey, this is what happened here. Here's how it should be doing. So our errors there have gone way down. So that's an excellent question. The system itself has many modules that work together, and then there are other systems that work with the city that have to feed into it.
Any questions on this side of the dais?
So a quick definition of a project module. Is that any new item the city wants to, say, make a contract for becomes a project?
Not necessarily. So there's kind of two things. So there's projects and grants, and they all go through the project module. Grants can be easily explained, and you know that the feds or the state give us money, give us grants for things. Other people, organizations can give us grants. A grant may or may not be what you're probably thinking of as a project, but we also have projects that are not grant funded. Both of those go through the projects module. So when I mentioned public works, most of those, whatever their funding source is, there might be some grants. There are some grants for public works, but some of them are not grant funded, but there'll still be a project because there are various things they need to track in terms of a project for that. Grants, which may not be a project, so to speak, they also go through the projects module. One of the things that the projects module is supposed to help us do and hasn't done it very well yet, but we're making great progress. A key part of the auditing process is the single audit, which is the audit required for state and federal grants. And OneCloud is supposed to help us pull that information better. And so, again, some of the new people on our team have been working with our IT department and Oracle to get a report set up that will pull all that information together, so it makes it much easier to do the single audit. On the reporting side in OneCloud, there are lots of options. And again, I wasn't here before this started, so I can't really speak to what reporting was like in Famous. But people who were here go, oh, it's already so much better. My boss, Joey Grivey, says, oh, it's so much better. Joel, who's our finance and systems and reporting manager in accounting, he's like, it's so much better. Other people will say it's so much better. Those of us who are new go, it's not where we need it to be yet. But it's so much better. And again, there's so many options. There are different ways you can pull reports. And we are, fortunately, because we're working with Oracle, we are getting more reports set up and learning more how to use all the reporting modules. Does that answer your question?
Pretty much. One other question. I know that risk management within the last couple of years changed to Origami. Is that one of the programs that they changed all their reporting and injuries, accidents, all that type of stuff is under Origami.
Origami is in the risk management department, and they still use that. They don't interface with us. Well, there are interfaces that would be an external system that interfaces with OneCloud, but I don't know that much about Origami myself.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
No problem. Any other questions before I go? I was trying to ask you for a bid. That's why I was like, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I came in at somewhat of the tail end. So would there be a time where, you know, it gets moved? Like, I know you guys are still kind of getting to learn the system.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be a time where you guys are like, okay, this is every day?
I didn't hear the very last part of what you said.
Would there be a time where, okay, I know this system came out, I believe you said 2020, correct?
Yes. We hope so. Yeah, we are so much better. It really, those of us who are still here, and really I have a very strong team now, and I really feel like everybody who's still here really wants to be here and will stick around and see this through. That's what we're going for. We know the system will work. We know there's so much we know what we need, and we have more resources. And because we do have more people, it's easier, because like I have two great people working the grant side that I didn't have before. And it's wonderful. They just dove right in and mastered a lot of things. So, yeah, if we weren't sitting here feeling like, yep, we're eventually going to get to where it's a piece of cake, then we'd be like pulling our hair out. So it's much better. And I've been through things in the past, other places, where it was kind of the same thing. When I came in, we were starting to do new stuff. And after a few years, it was like, oh, now we know what we're doing. Now we understand the system. And it was worth it. And that's another key thing. It's a good question. Yeah, we feel like it's worth it. And we may be tired and frustrated sometimes, but it's worth it. It's worth it for the city, definitely, to go through this.
Go ahead, Mr. Roberts.
I have one more question. Are there any other large organizations with similar systems?
That what?
Are there any other large organizations, you know, comparable to Jacksonville, with the same system?
Yes. The city of Atlanta uses Oracle Fusion, that's what we use. We just call it OneCloud. Detroit also. And they've all had similar problems. I mean, it's kind of normal that when you're doing a new ERP system, it's going to take a few years. And Detroit, it's taken a few years. And, you know, they didn't have a solution for the interest distribution thing, but they didn't have the same need that we did, apparently. So, yeah, there are other municipalities out there that are using it. Happen to be one of the bigger ones. And we do reach out, and we are reaching out to, we haven't gone as far along as we might want to, but we do have some information from Atlanta that we may be able to look at. I mentioned that Boca got in touch with me, and like, yeah, we'll try to share what we know. There are a couple of user groups out there for governments that are using it to try to talk to each other. On LinkedIn, there's one. So, you know, we're talking to each other to see what we can learn to make everybody's jobs easier. Good. Share the fun. Share the pain.
I'm always notorious one that has all the questions that are a lot. Okay. So I want to make sure everyone gets a chance to ask theirs. One quick question before I launch in. What does ASD stand for, just out of curiosity?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay. In my work life, I have a similar company that has the exact same name, so I was just curious to see if it was the same one. But I will endeavor to find out. Okay, so Mr. Carter has talked about whenever he's talking about the quarterly reports, how the city had to, we affectionately called it the SWAT team, had to hire outside help, and I'm assuming based on your presentation that was Oracle, to try to get a lot of these, I don't know what to call it, but get the books ready for you to be able to do these reports. And I know that was specifically done for the report that you had to give to the state. Is this same team helping you to try to catch up on the quarterly report so they won't be a quarter behind? Or
I'm not sure what team you're referring to.
Mr. Henry is referring back to when you were trying to close the books for the 20 fiscal year, and getting and we had the it was Oracle, may have been Oracle, you call in helping to whatever was the problems were. I can't remember what that was at the time to.
Okay, so you're talking about an external team from the city?
Yes.
So for 2020, it would have been AST who helped us with the carry forward and everything. For 21, it was Oracle. So, yeah, we work. Oracle Consulting has just been a lifesaver for us. If we didn't have the opportunity to work with them, because they helped us find a lot of configuration issues. So right now, when we have an issue that is like, we need to get this fixed, and we need to get fixed it now. We've been reaching out to Oracle Consulting now that we also work with Oracle Managed Cloud. And ITD helps us figure out which one of these Oracle teams we work with. So we definitely work with both of them.
Thanks for the assist, Mr. Carter. But to the end of that question, when do you think you'll be able to get to a point where the quarterly reports will be, I don't want to say on time, but
yeah. So on the accounting side, as soon as we feel like, as soon as December is closed, the reporting and systems group in my division is ready to pull the report, and my fund accounting area is ready to review it and make sure it looks good. And then for December, then we have to send it over to budget. So Angela, the budget chief, can add the projections. So it's a matter of getting December closed before we can do that. We are vastly improved. I mean, again, it was so frustrating for us last week when it's like, really? We're hung up with procurement because of something we have successfully done because the latest patch messed it up. The latest patch wasn't a normal patch. Oracle did an infrastructure reboot or upgrade also, so it was more. It was like, oh, bad timing for us because we really need this now. But that's life. So, yeah, we are so much better than we were. We have to keep reminding ourselves that. And we also really appreciate the fact that, you know, the council auditors understand what we're going through. Our external auditors understand what we're going through. The other people on the fourth floor understand what we're going through. Hopefully y'all do. The finance committee understands. My boss, Joey, is great with explaining things. So that's really, really helpful. But, yeah, we are getting there. I mean, like I said, fiscal year 21 audit is going to be so much better than 20. And 22, you know, like we have to get the 21 audit done by June 30th, not to be late. Now, the 2021 was done by December 30th, so that was late. But Joey in particular kept the state people informed of what was going on. They knew. They wanted us to do it right, so they were very patient with us. But now it's like, so we're going to get this one done by June. And then fiscal year 22, ideally we would get it done by March. Now, we might not get it done by March because, you know, we'll only be in the third year. But, yes, getting it done on time because I personally love reporting. That, to me, is fun. Get the reports done, analyze it, go from there. And the fact that we haven't been able to get those done regularly. Then also on my team, again, a lot of my new people coming in who have experience elsewhere, they're like, this needs to be done. I mean, my new person who just started on Monday, she's like, what do you mean? And she's very patient, too, but she's super smart. She's already digging in. She's like, this needs to be done. Yes, we need to do this. I'm like, great. Thank you for being here. You will say what the rest of us have been saying. But as I was saying, my fund account person, we have a new fund accounting manager there since October also. One of the things he's doing is making sure that on a monthly basis, everybody knows what they're supposed to do, and also getting reports created so that at the end of each month, we can easily, basically, metaphorically speaking, push a button and get a report so that we analyze it and go, oh, this is off here, that's off there, so that when we get to the end of the year or even the end of the quarter, we don't have to clean up for the past because we've been doing that as we go. That's what we want to do. That's what we have fun doing. So hopefully we'll get there soon.
Okay. And I think we truly appreciate that as well because reports do tell a story. That's one of the things I always look forward to whenever Mr. Carter does the quarterly report because it really gives you a picture as to where the city is. Mm-hmm. Kind of notice certain things that may be coming along the way that we should all be paying attention to. A couple other things. I was looking at the first time we got a presentation on ERP, and it was back in 2019 from Mr. Lathrop.
Is that? Ken Lathrop, yes.
I was looking back at the notes just to see where we were back then and kind of things that have kind of gone on and where we are now. But one thing I remembered asking, and the notes confirmed it, was the component about the system, one cloud that is, that could be public facing, so people would be able to see in greater detail the budget and where things are, particularly since now it's just a PDF that's thrown on the website where it's hard for you to find it anyway.
Right.
I was curious, with the delays in the system and stuff and where we are now, is that still something that finance is looking to do or is open to, or have you guys kind of gone in a different direction?
Yeah, so part of what we need for that is a data warehouse, which is out there, something that was supposed to be in progress, but all these other things have sort of delayed that. That would be very helpful. We have someone who is in our systems and reporting team who actually worked. She's retired from the city, but she's working part-time for us now because she's very enthusiastic about this. And that's one of the things she's very interested in making it, you know, basically touchable by the public. Log into the city website and have fun, play around, look, see, compare, see how the city is doing. You know, you may be aware that there is, you go into the COJ website and you go to coj.net/finance/procurement. You can see all the contracts out there. That's not the same as a budget, but you can see the contracts. But I agree, there's a lot more. I think it would be really cool to have it so that the average citizen, if they wanted to could go online and just play around.
That's why I smiled when you mentioned Atlanta, because I think they're an example. They're an example of them doing that, because I know for their city, I think they launched it a couple of years ago, where citizens do have that capability of just going onto their city website and do everything that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Is the data warehouse the only missing element for that? I don't want to understate it.
No, I don't think that would be the only missing element. But I think that's a little further out in the future. The reason I mentioned the person who's working part-time, because I know she's very interested in helping us do that. But we're not there yet. She's also helping us with other things, reports. But, yeah, I don't know the details exactly of what it would take to do that. Someplace I worked before, when I was there, we were also changing systems, much smaller company, much smaller thing. But one of the things, I actually worked for a community foundation, so you had donors who wanted to log in and see what was going on with their money. Don't blame them, right? But one of the things that we heard, if we were going to make this, we moved this system, that, you know, if you, Mr. Henry, were able to log in, you could see instantly the latest thing that happened on your funds. Well, accounting doesn't always do everything right, you know, but we usually fix it right away. So we were like, you mean we go in there and we do something? And actually, it wasn't even totally posted. It was things you, and we were like, really? We're not even finished our work and somebody can come in and look at us? That's weird. So there is a fine line, and that's a kind of a ridiculous line. That's why we were so weirded out by hearing about it. But yeah, things that are posted, I think that would be really cool if you could go in. But I don't know the details of what it would take to be able to take our system, OneCloud, which parts of it a citizen could log into. But I think that would be great.
Do you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, do you know where that conversation would be had in terms of, because I imagine almost as a policy decision,
mm-hmm.
in addition to all the work that goes along with it.
Right.
Where would that conversation be held? Is that Mr. Grivey and Mr. Hughes, or is that something where it's just a goal out there that we may eventually have it as a nice to have, but.
Yeah, I think you're right. It would be a policy in terms of what are we going to make available. And I think practically speaking, it would be Mr. Hughes and Mr. Grivey bouncing around ideas and getting input, you know, from other staff as to what could happen, and then asking us to investigate how we can make that happen. But I know at this point, I don't think they're going to come ask us that for a little while.
No, I figured.
But I know if you go out there and you Google or go to YouTube and look at Oracle's Fusion, they make it sound like you can. It's really easy to go do that. So I say keep asking this question because it's a good one.
I'm going to echo what Ms. Groundsville said. It's the salesman always does a great job until implementation happens. And then the last question I had, and you tell me if I'm wrong, if it doesn't involve fund balances at all, but the city has, in addition to the gas tax, but the city has received a lot of money from the federal government from the American Rescue Plan, and I'm sure there's a lot of requirements that Treasury has placed on the city in terms of reporting. And you're getting another infusion of that in this upcoming fiscal year. How does the city kind of track that independently of everything else? And secondary question to that, is there a report that you generate to anyone that kind of gives you people an outlook as to how those monies are being used and how easy it is for you to be able to understand where it's all going?
Yeah, that's a good question. So not only the American Rescue Plan, but before that, the CARES Act, and we have to report those to Treasury. And that's something that I know that Mr. Grivey, and in fact all of us in his department are really proud of, is how fast the city got that money out. And I had the pleasure of being heavily involved in how are we accounting for it. And the American Rescue Plan is even bigger. which is fabulous. So in our accounting system, practically speaking, you know, our accounting string is seven sections long, and the center is also where we put the program. So there's, we make sure the accounting string is such that, that we can pull reports and look and see how much have we spent here and how much have we budgeted here. And I frequently get asked questions by Joey, like, where are we with this? Because, you know, now that Charles Moreland is in charge up there, he's asking questions because we have to spend more money in this direction. So there's a lot of things that we do in the system. And in terms of the treasury, we just did the first quarterly report on the American Rescue Plan for treasury. And, of course, that report is really large, and it goes down to, you know, the vendors who get the money and everything. We had to do the same thing for the CARES Act. I don't think we have put that out anywhere for people. It's certainly something that, you know, public information requests would pull. In terms of how helpful it would be for you to look at it, I don't know, because I don't know that the Treasury has put the report in the format that's the most user-friendly. But there is a lot of information. As I said, we've just done the first quarterly report through December on how we have the plan, and it shows you what program it's in and what's been budgeted and what's been spent so far.
What format is the report in? Is it just a detailed report that's just really long? Is it a whole bunch of Excel sheets? So
it's a PDF. And when we go into the system, it's very similar. The one for American Rescue Plan is very similar to the CARES Act. But we actually have an external consultant who's helping us with it. So I didn't personally go in on that one. But you have to basically enter in the Treasury system, you're entering numbers in, and then it has its own report that it generates, and you have to look at it and certify it. One of the things that on the accounting end is kind of annoying to us is they talk about obligations and expenses. And in the accounting world, they're two separate things. And in the Treasury reports, their obligation is the obligations and the expenses. In other words, you know, if we haven't spent it, if you give me $1 million to spend and I go out and I put out purchase orders for $900,000, that's my obligation. As soon as I spend some of it, let's say I spent $200,000, now my obligations are $700,000 and I've spent two. Well, that's how we see it in our system, $702,000, total expenditure of total consumption of $900,000. And the Treasury system says, no, the obligations are the whole $900,000. The fact that you spent that, so it just makes it a little more difficult for us to translate it for them.
Is it? I know it's long, but is it possible for us to still get a copy of it and see it?
Yeah, I'm sure it would be.
Who would we ask for that?
You can ask me. Hey, Jeff, if you could send me an email to remind me to see if I can get that, and I could send it to you and you could distribute it. Does that sound like a plan? It's the American Rescue Plan quarterly report to Treasury.
That's all that I have.
I have one more
question,
if I may. Do you feel that you have identified, I won't say all, but most of your challenges? I know it's hard as you're, you know, working in a new system, but do you feel maybe you've identified most of them and are learning and moving from those?
I would like to think so. I think I'd like to hope that the little things that we haven't identified yet would be what I was telling you about, where, you know, because of the patch, all of a sudden a thing that we run every month isn't working. I'm really big on analogies. So one of mine would be that let's just say I gave you an old house that's totally covered with vines, and you've heard stories about it in the past. So you're like, sure, I'll take that. So the first thing you go do is you go in and you pull all the vines off to see what it is. Because before you do that, you have no idea of the condition on the inside of the house. So we're past that part. I would like to say we've pulled all the vines off and we're exploring on the inside. But once you do that, you know, you go to a room that's not used very often and you step on the floor and you discover there's a hole in the floor. Well, I think we've pretty much found that the foundation is secure at this point, using this analogy. But we may discover, oh, there's actually a closet over here behind a secret panel we didn't even know about, which could be great. Or it could be, yeah, there's a leaky pipe over there. I mean, that's kind of where we are. So I think we, you know, we've got all the vines off, and the house is basically in pretty good repair, but we, there may be some more surprises.
Okay, so major.
By the apple. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming.
I appreciate your interest in what we're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. All right. So, do we have any public comment?
Yes, we do.
All right.
Hello, my name is John Nooney. My name and address is on file. And, you know, I just want to touch on a couple of things. You know, the True Commission. And, you know, I came to you all a while back, and you know, there was a couple of issues. But the one was called, you know, public participation. And what that has to do with is through the Jacksonville City Council committee processes. You know, and that's the ability to speak before a vote is taken. That's not happening. And so, you know, but anyway, that's not really what you delve into. But here's an issue, though, that I've brought to your attention. And that has to do with FINE. That's the Florida Inland Navigation District. It's a special taxing district. You know, and Duval County is a taxpaying member. And so, anyway, year after year, and it's millions of dollars, year after year after year after year. And I'll tell you, I just think, you know, there's some unbelievable backroom deals taking place, in my opinion. Unbelievable. And so the public is shut out from this. And, you know, this is, you know, it's big time money. And so every year, the city council, through ordinance and a public hearing, hands out these projects for this money. And 2021-0075, that was 2 years ago, you know, I was shut out. This year, just recently, we had 2022-0035. And I went to the commissioners of FIND. You know, they're appointed by the governor. Told them, hey, you know, Duval County, you know, we got some really bad issues going on here. You know, what's going on? So last month's meeting was supposed to have been here in Duval County. It was canceled. So now I'm going to probably go out of county and just say, hey, what does Joe Q Public do about this? And right now, nothing's happening. And just on a completely different side. And these, you know, a charter recommendation, or maybe not the charter, but a recommendation was for these projects to go before the CPACs. That's not happening. I don't know if you ever, you know, through your CPAC, because I'm noticing, you know, some of y'all are appointed from, you know, to CPACs. Have you had any of this, any presentations over the years? You have? Okay, at the CPACs? Okay, well, you know, it hasn't happened in mine. I don't know, maybe it's picking and I don't know. But
you went, not to use your time, we've usually gone whenever they've invited us to do a presentation, usually before they want to appoint someone to the CPAC since they have a seat.
Oh, well, I'm talking about the Florida Inland Navigation District,
the
projects, you know, in other words, that they go before the CPACs, you know, and like I'm in the Southeast Planning District 3, so, you know, we've got three council members.
Has your CPAC formally requested a presentation?
That I don't know. I would, but I'll tell you what, I go to them all the time, you know, and I bring up the same issues.
Well, why don't you ask them to request the person that can give you this information to put on a presentation?
Yeah. What?
They turn you down, well, then there's other action to be taken, I presume. So if they say they will and they do it, you're taking care of your problem.
Well, I have tried. I should. It had. It's Mr. Roberts. I appreciate that. I will. This, you know, our projects now have, you know, it was just last month. So you got next year, you know, to go ahead and attempt this again. But I'm just saying, you know, 2 years ago, this year, you know, it's just not happening. And I would just invite you all to look into, you know, the fine projects, you know, just, again, the expenditures. I'm on Pottsburg Creek, and, you know, that's on the list for a design project, like $800. To me, it's the biggest waste of money. So I really think you should look into this because, you know, it's taxpayer dollars, and I think the public's just being shut out of the process. Anyway, I appreciate your time, and I really appreciate you listening. And because of your charge, I just hope that you would take it up.
Thank you, Mr. Nooney.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, make sure you give your card to Jeff. All right. Mr. Carter, why don't you go ahead with the auditor's report?
Yes, sir. Through the commission to the chair, council auditor's office has released one report since the last true commission meeting, report number 855, the independent agency quarterly summary for the 3 months ending December 31st, 2021 was released on February 15th, 2022. Some highlights from that. I'm just reading for what we're reporting here, that the quarterly report for the first quarter for the fiscal year is only for the independent agencies. The city did not submit the first quarterly report, as we already heard. They're working on closing out 9/30/21, and they're still working through the system issues. The last quarterly report that we received on the city was for 9/30/20. Highlights for the independent agencies for JEA. Electric system is projecting a surplus of $115 million at year end, and a balanced budget for water and sewer and district energy systems. The reason for the surplus in electric system is largely due to JEA not spending about $100 million in capital. However, we are in discussions with JEA as possibly revising some of their projections to be more realistic, even if it necessitates an amendment through City Council. Given rising fuel costs and policy changes, the fuel rate stabilization used to help cover significant increases and help absorb some of the impact to customers has been depleted to zero. It was $41.7 million as of 9/30/21. For JTA, all divisions projected a balanced budget at year end. The general fund engineering division projects an overall favorable surplus variance of $11,096,216, and that's due to the sale of surplus property by JTA. As a side note, JTA still needs to file its budget amendment for fiscal year 2021 for the bus, skyway, and general fund engineering division. For JPA,
I'll let you finish.
No, go ahead. Okay. You know, I can take a question if you.
Why haven't they filed that yet? Because I think we talked about that last month.
I'm not sure. I think they're working on it, but I'm not sure them. I'm not sure. Yes, sir.
I was going to say they did file their FY19 and FY20 amendments. And the council approved those last meeting or two meetings ago, not for the most recent year.
Second thing, I was reading it earlier and I was trying to make sense of it, but I was trying to figure out a way to say it in layman's terms. Can you explain in the quarterly report when it's talking about them, I guess, accidentally leaving out the union increases? I just wasn't sure whether or not I was reading it wrong. page four.
What happened was that when the budget was being prepared and then discussed and reviewed by us, they were still in negotiations with their union. They didn't want to put a percentage increase in the budget because they were still in negotiations with the unions. Because once we present it, we present. They had it in the budget. It's in their contingency line, but it's not budgeted in the line of salaries.
Wait, you said they budgeted in
they put an estimated amount for the increase in the contingency line, not their salary line.
So would it not be normal practice that once the negotiations would finish, they would do a budget amendment to reconcile that?
It just depends on how the year goes. If they stay under budget for their salaries and the contingency can handle the salary line, they stay under their expenditures that were budgeted, there wouldn't be a need to amend their budget. The one line would show up, but they could move from line to line if they chose to, but it would be just explained that it's down this line or whatever. It's in the budget, so it would not go over the budget line item, so there wouldn't be a need for a budget amendment. As long as they don't exceed their appropriations. For JPA, there's no budgetary stress. It's projected at year end. There's a surplus of $1.2 million is projected at year end. And do you have any questions on JPA? Okay. JAA. JAA is projecting a surplus of over $15 million at year end based on first quarter activity, mainly due to revenues anticipated to exceed budget, including $8 million related to COVID funding that was not budgeted. And JTA is also projecting a $2 million negative variance in salaries. And that's due to COLAs that are being issued. They're above of what was budgeted. What was budgeted was 2%. What the COLAs are being given out are 3.8%. Also, reinstatement of an employee incentive plan with a payout of about $407,000 that was not budgeted, and $155,000 in other incentives and bonuses that were not budgeted. And any questions on those? Yes, sir.
Now, could you tell me what kind of COLA formula is used on wages?
I don't know.
The debt ratings requirement that they're now asking, what kind of, is that something that now all the independent agencies are going to be required to do on a regular basis?
That's shown in our report?
Mm-hmm.
They've always been shown as far as their debt.
I was just basing on that note that was at the bottom of six.
Yeah, we've always asked them what the rating agencies have given them their score, and we've always put that in the quarterly summary report.
Oh, okay.
If there are no other questions, that concludes my report.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Carter. It's happening to all of us. That's why, I'm slowly moving away from it. I have an audit committee. Mr. Roberts, is there anything that you want to share for legislative tracking?
Well, I think the big news this time is the garage deal. And I'll try and explain what it... First of all, it looks like there's $32.5 million involved. That's the number. The second thing is that I think if you go back, a very complicated arrangement was made whereby we contributed for the purchase of the... We contributed for the purchase.
Random person decides to listen to our recordings, they won't be able to hear. Okay.
he can correct me too on this. The person that developed the three garages, now three, contributed relatively little money. Rather, the garages were financed by the city issuing bonds, and then the money from the bonds went to the developer, who in turn used it to build the structures. He retained title, as I understand. And a further agreement was made where the city would... subsidize the developer to the tune of making up any direct losses and adding to that a reasonable rate of return, so he was guaranteed a profit. This sort of blew up when the Downtown Investment Authority, who had been administering this particular contract, determined that the developer was not making the kind of financial reports that he was supposed to. They suspended payments, and there was a lawsuit and general dogfight. And that brings us to what we have today. We have, number one, there's a proposed settlement lurking in the background, and I don't really know the details of it, but I can mention what the legislation encounters. First of all, there's one bill, 137, which is basically a rollover of the debt owed on the development. That's one thing. A second thing is that in the next... Bill 138, the Downtown Investment Authority is invested with the obligation to manage the garages and to rent the garages from the developer. And there's a certain amount of rent, I suppose, this has begun to reach a period where I might ask... Mr. Clements here, to add something. Can you tell us precisely what the money that Downtown Investment Authority will pay to the developer will be used for? Is this used to retire the bonds that had been put in there, or just what? I can't tell from what I've read.
Let me see.
I think at least Boyer said during rules the bond rollover is so that way you can get a lower interest.
Well, I know about the bond rollover, and that is different from the payments that the Downtown Investment Authority is required now to make to the developer, who still holds title to the place.
Unfortunately, my email is not working, so I can't pull up the file that I sent you.
Oh.
The Downtown Investment Authority did a comparison of sort of before these bills pass and after, how the deals work. But as I understood, well, let me see here. I might be able to pull up my bill summary. Let me see that. Hard to get things when I'm logged in from down here rather than at my computer. But I believe that the way it's going to work is that... Oh, you found it?
Yeah, I have it open.
Got it? Okay. It is a complicated kind of a thing. The city is going to refinance the bonds at a lower interest rate, which is going to hopefully save about $5 million. Let's see here. We're going to do away with the payments to MPS that's based on their operating losses and their debt service, because the city is going to take over the debt service, so that will be on us. We will not pay debt service through them as part of their operating costs. We've been loaning them money for the however many years, 15 or more years, that this deal has been in effect. The original idea was that the city would loan the developer any shortfalls in their operating costs and debt service until the garages began generating positive revenue, which would then pay back whatever loans the city had made to them over the years. And then when all the loans were paid back, the city and the developer would then split the operating profits, as you will. But of course, there never has been any positive on the operation, so it's all been loss. And we've accumulated almost $77.5 million in loans to the companies. So as I understand it, what they're going to do is they're going to freeze that amount as of the date that they make the settlement. And $77.5 million is going to be reduced by $2.5 million a year as the rental payment on the garages. The city, let's see.
Wait, just to make sure I understand, they're going to use the $2 million each year to pay down the bonds, or?
Now, where does that money go, that so-called rental money? For what purpose?
Well, let me read the summary of the new agreement and see if this sheds any light on it. DIA will assume 100% control over the garage operations, participating directly in any gain or loss. The new lease ensures MPS ownership of the garages until 2051, unless the city or DIA exercises a purchase option in 2041 or thereafter. DIA pays MPS an annual rent payment consisting of $175,000 in cash and an additional non-cash amount in the form of loan forgiveness. So that's how they're going to amortize the $77 million, is we're going to call that your rent payment for the next, 30-some years. DIA can terminate the lease early and purchase the garages for any reason beginning in 2041 for $262,500 plus the sum of any remaining rent through 2051. and that's both the cash and the non-cash loan forgiveness. Early termination purchase can be exercised for any garage individually on a pro rata basis. DIA has the option to take ownership of the garages in 2051 at the end of the lease term for $262,500 if the purchase option has not been previously exercised. The MPS bonds are refinanced today by the city to achieve debt service savings. MPS contributes $25,000 annually to a capital reserve fund to be used by DIA for capital expenditures on the garages. The existing capital reserve fund amount is supplemented by $428,000 in funds already withheld by the DIA from a prior loan request. And DIA makes final loans to MPS for $1.4 million to cover previous operating losses, in addition to a loan for the period due through closing.
In other words, they've got a rate of adequate rate of return and come away with whatever is left.
So the rent is going to be $175,000 in cash, and then the write down of $2.5 million a year of the money that they owe the city in loans, we're going to write it off at $2.5 million a year until we hit zero.
Were you at rules earlier this week?
I listened to rules.
Did I hear wrong when Ms. Boyer said something to the effect that the city had already written off the $70 million or so that they've already loaned, or are they are they still looking at that as a valid debt that's on the city's books?
That I do not know. I do remember there being something about a write off at some point, but I don't know the details.
The only reason why I'm asking is if we're crediting the rent by the $2 million that they otherwise would pay and then reducing the balance every year, but we've written off the debt. I was just curious kind of, you know, how they're doing that.
I couldn't say. I seem to remember something was being written off as an uncollectible on the city's books.
Yeah, prior to the settlement.
So okay, but this maybe then it makes it collectible again. It's now it's now back in play.
Yeah, and but I don't quite understand the route it takes. I see money being put in and cash flow and where cash goes. But the second thing is that in the debt forgiveness, how does this play in?
I think that this, at least from my elementary understanding of the deal, the way that the city benefits is that this debt doesn't continue to climb every single year, mm-hmm. and they don't have to continue to loan MPS money. And MPS, the good side for them is that they get this lawsuit resolved. They get to wash their hands of it potentially in 20 to 30 years.
Find another city.
And they don't have to be obligated to pay the city. We're winners in this one. I don't know if we can say that, but it's resolved. Is part of the settlement? Because I think both of the city in particular, when they filed it, said that MPS didn't live up to the obligations. Is there anything in the settlement that acknowledges that one way or another, or both sides say X to make each other happy outside of the terms?
I have not read the settlement agreement, but I'm sure it's covered in there somehow that both parties agree that we're fine with where we are and we'll move on from here. But I have not read the settlement, so don't know exactly what it says on that score. It's on the west side. It's near an industrial park. Maybe, is it Pritchard Road somewhere?
295 and Pritchard.
295 and Pritchard Road.
Hotel's on that corner.
I think that was 485,000 or something like that. Amount was somewhere around 485,000.
Is it directly city money or is it a connection with the state as well?
The Rev Grant, just city money.
I think it was about 485,000 or something like that. It wasn't in the millions, I don't think.
I can't find my copy of the summary.
You know the number?
No. I had to put a copy in there somewhere, but evidently I've buried it. Economic development shouldn't be putting money in.
I don't disagree.
Again, the location is, did you say for Pritchard? The location again with the hotel?
It's 4142 Perimeter Industrial Parkway West. It's within the King Soutelle Crossing Community Redevelopment Area. Let me just read it to you. And it's their Pritchard Hospitality desires to develop an 82-room limited service True by Hilton Motel. 1.8-acre site was purchased in March 2020, shortly after the COVID outbreak occurred, delaying construction of the motel. COVID disruption delayed the project, and in the interim, the cost of construction materials and scarcity of labor has substantially increased the cost by 17%. That factor, coupled with credit tightening and ever-changing lending requirements, have negatively affected the financial viability of the project. The proposed True Hotel by Hilton will be the first new hotel developed within the King Soutelle Crossing CRA.
I live in the area, and I have a lot. So they have been requesting it for a while. So to see it come to pass, that's a plus. Because I think one of the problems back then was, I think, sewer system or something like that was an issue why they couldn't do it. Now they're actually finally making something happen.
Okay. And I apologize that when I said two hotels before, I was thinking of Commonwealth and 295. That's what I was about to say. It's two. Exit below.
There isn't one, but they are building up.
Other questions for Mr. Roberts? Okay. I will be really quick since I know we're almost at 5:30. Good news on the Inspector General selection. It was fun. On Monday, we had a six-hour ram-through session of interviewing six candidates for the city's Inspector General. One candidate dropped out, so it made it a little bit shorter. So we started at 8, ended at 4. We had three candidates that we liked. One that was very interesting. I will say, if you want some humor, go back and listen to the recording, because there was one. It's a perfect example of how someone can be very qualified on paper, but just not present well in an interview. And this is someone that's like been previously Senate confirmed. So that was interesting. But there were three candidates in particular that the committee liked. One was a special agent in charge for NCIS here in Jacksonville, and had worked on so many cases internationally and nationally that the committee found very interesting. The other was a gentleman from Jefferson Parish in Louisiana. He was like your consensus all around previous IG that has a lot of experience. He had been there for like 7 years and had really built up the office from scratch. And the other one was a gentleman from Wisconsin who was the inspector general for that state's Medicaid office. We started off by thinking that we would probably come to a consensus really easily and not have to do ranking, but we all had different opinions. We all agreed on three, but we had different opinions as to who the top one should be, so then we had to do rankings. The NCIS gentleman is a free veteran, so he got a veteran's preference. So whenever you do that, you have to add a percentage of the overall score to his score to add that preference. And he got the position by 2 votes in the ranking. So Councilman Newby is going to introduce a one-cycle emergency to confirm his appointment via city council, I guess the next time bill introductions are done, and you'll be able to learn more about them. All of them were strong candidates. I think all of us would have felt comfortable with either three got selected. I had my preference as to who it should be, but he came in second. but ultimately, I think the city would be better for it. We're having a meeting in April as kind of as our last touch base with the current interim inspector general, Ms. Goodman. She's done a very, very good job in terms of dealing with the backlog of reports that Ms. Green left, and is going to give an exit report to the committee as well to the future inspector general on suggestions as how they can continue the work in the office, because they've finally gotten to a point where things have calmed down and everyone seems to be. And that's my report.
Question, which one had the one that had the military preference? Is that the one that got it? Mm-hmm. And which one was that, Wisconsin or Louisiana?
Neither one. So he was the one that worked for NCIS.
Oh, okay.
Was
maybe
it's okay. But he had served as inspector general for NCIS. Prior to that, he had worked on one of the, I think, like really famous cases where this South Asian company was overcharging the Navy for fuel. You know it. Okay. And some other things. And he also worked on the Pensacola base case where it had a terrorist attack a couple years ago as well. But he had a really strong investigative experience that the committee really liked. I guess he was the dark horse candidate that on paper he didn't seem to have all the things that we would want, but he really, really presented well when we interviewed him, and he was the last interview of the day, so that probably also helped too. But I think he's a good pick, and I think he'll be able to start a lot of good investigations. One thing that he's particularly focused on, he doesn't want to just start an investigation just for the sake of starting one. He really wants it to be on things that are really actionable, and I think his experience particularly. Yes. I missed that part.
They made it pretty clear.
the way that we did it, so every meeting we always get a binder of everything, and then they take the binders with us. So half the time, one of the reasons why I can't exactly say his name is because I've already kind of blanked it out. Some of us kind of took different approaches in the way that we did the interviews. I made a purpose of like not Googling anyone so I could come in fresh. Some members didn't do that. They shall remain nameless. But ultimately, I think we came to a good product.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions on that? All right. So Mr. Day is not here because his wife is ill.
Oh, okay.
So I guess we'll forego Sheriff's Office staffing proposal item unless anyone has any thoughts they wanted to add on that particular piece. All right. So I think the final thing that we can achieve, because we have delayed it long enough, is Mr. Roberts' Peer Cities Comparison Research that I asked everyone to come back with at this meeting with any changes or suggestions they would like made before we actually act on it. So.
Work is very comprehensive.
Well, there's tons of stuff.
Yes.
So does anyone have anything that they would like to add, amend, ask about the report? I think the only thing that we had outstanding from the last meeting is I know Commissioner Day had asked if it was a way to produce something that, I guess the figures that the tables that took out the costs associated with like the school board and independent agencies that the city doesn't have direct control over.
Well, that's a separate subject. You have to dig all that out of cities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that expands the, you might make an independent one.
Okay. So does everyone feel they're ready to act on it?
You did a great job.
I would just suggest that we circulate it, you know, save it. We hope you find this of interest that will open avenues for you to explore.
Then I would love to entertain a motion to adopt the Peer Studies Comparison Research as the true committee's report on the subject and distributed far and wide.
I'd be happy to make that motion. It's stated by
if I could form my words right. Does anyone second that motion? Joint seconds. Any discussion?
Great job.
Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes. Congratulations, Mr. Roberts. All right. We don't have any new business that I'm aware of. Does anyone have any commissioner comments? All right. Seeing none, our next meeting is on April the 7th. 2022, and I would love to entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right. An object. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.